නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, we are discussing Sakkapanya Sutta, or the king, or the god Sakka's questions to the Buddha, and this is a very interesting sutta, which has in a way some aesthetic aspect and as well as fairly some philosophical as well as some practical aspect. So actually why we selected this sutta is actually related because of its contribution towards calming down mental proliferations. We discuss about how the genesis of mental proliferation happens in the Madhupindika Sutta, and then we went on to Indriya Bhavana Sutta, where we learned how we could apply what we have learned from Madhupindika Sutta. And one strategy that Buddha mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta is the Chittanupassana, where one is observing one's mind when one is encountering various sounds, sights, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, and various thoughts. So, in terms, when one is dealing with the outside world through one's sense faculties, there are various thoughts might happen, and there are sort of ups and downs in the mind. So Buddha recommends us to return back to that equanimity, which is what a practitioner has earned through his practice. It is not the simple equanimity or the equanimity tone, the equanimity feeling that we are talking here. Equanimity we are talking here is something that a yogi, a practitioner has derived through his practice. So, and we discuss in detail about that, and now we get on to this Sakkapanya Sutta, which is available in Digha Nikaya. So before we come to the part dealing with mental proliferations, we went through some aesthetic aspects happened at the beginning of the sutta. On one occasion, Buddha was living at Indasala cave in Rajagaha, and at that time, God Sakka wanted to meet the Buddha. So, without he immediately coming and meeting the Buddha, he sent one of his servants, we can say one of his attendants, called Panchasika, to meet the Buddha. Then, Panchasika comes and meet the Buddha, and he actually uses certain songs to delight the Buddha, and those songs are actually based on his love towards one goddess called Suryavachasa. And this Panchasika is in love with Suryavachasa, and he actually sang a song combining some information about her and the love he has towards her. And again, having some attributes of Buddha Dhamma Sangha. It's a kind of a combination of love song plus a kind of a devotional song. Anyway, so once he sang that song, Buddha didn't criticize it. Rather, he said, "Your singing as well as the sound coming through your lute is fairly mixed really well. One didn't exceed the other one, so those are well balanced. Sound of the music and as well as your voice are well balanced." So Buddha made this comment, and now they are actually having a very good conversation, some friendly conversation. And at that time, God Sakka remembered Panchasika that just now remind Buddha that I am going to come and see him. So at that time, Panchasika gave the message to the Buddha, and so God Sakka now approached the Buddha and paid respect to him, and now he started a kind of a discussion. So before coming to the philosophical discussion or kind of question and answering kind of a thing, so he also started a kind of a cordial discussion with the Buddha, friendly discussion with the Buddha. So there he mentioned that in previous another occasion he came to visit the Buddha, but at that time Buddha was in a seclusion in some sort of a samadhi concentration. As a result of that, he didn't want to disturb him, so he went away. But he left a message with another goddess, and he is inquiring now whether that goddess has given the message. And then Buddha admitted that yes, she has given the message, and I knew that you have come to see me. And then again, there's another interesting story God Sakka puts here. That is the story of Gopaka. Gopaka is a newly born god in the Tavatinsa. And there he mentioned that he was a woman in the human realm, and quite devoted to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and she was giving alms and practicing Dhamma, and she had the will to become a man. And because of the merit power, not only she has become a man, but rather she became a god, a son. Everyone was considered him as a son of the gods. Now he is now in the Tavatinsa realm, and he was quite amazed to see that three monks who were practicing under the guidance but didn't do it properly, and ultimately they have become servants to him. Now this Gopaka actually was talking to those two, three monks, and he in a way aroused urgency in those three monks, and as a result of that, so they started to practice, and actually only two of them started to practice, and they were able to attain the non-returner stage, and they left or passed away from the Tusita realm, Tavasinsa realm, and they have born again in the pure abodes. So this is another interesting story that this sutta talks here. And then now God Sakka start to ask questions. Now the question asked from the Buddha at the beginning is that why all these people are quarreling in a way? Now they also want to live happily, peacefully. Not only the humans, even the gods, Gandhabas, Asuras, Nagas. So all these beings actually want to live happily, peacefully. But why can't they do it? Then Buddha answer is as that is because of what you call Issamacharya, jealousy. Jealousy and avarice. So that is the reason for these all types of conflicts. Then God Sakka asks, what is the reason for Issa and Macharya? And then Buddha answer, that is the Piya Appiya, like and dislike. So people have this sort of conditioned nature in their mind. So they like to something, they don't like to another thing. They like to someone, they don't like to another one. So they have this kind of a conditioning in one their minds. As a result of that, this jealousy and avarice comes out. And then God Sakka asks, what is the reason for Piya and Appiya, like and dislike? And then Buddha mentioned it is the desire. So they have some sort of a chanda, desire. And that chanda is in a way a mental attribute. And that mental attribute, once developed, used for a long time, maintained in one's mind for a long time. So that is how it is manifested as like and dislike. And then God Sakka asks, what is the reason for desire? And then Buddha mentioned, it is thinking, vitakka. When one thinks, that aggravates the desire, that promotes desire. So thinking is the reason for getting very high amount of desire. And that reason Buddha mentioned here. And then God Sakka asks, what is the reason for thinking? Now here actually we come across the word papancha. Buddha mentioned tendency to proliferation. Papancha sanya sankha is the reason for thinking, reason for vitakka. So this comparison and actually this flow of dhamma and what we have learned through Madhupindika Sutta in a way seems like kind of a contradicting situation, where in Madhupindika Sutta we learn that vitakka conditions papancha. Thinking actually promotes mental proliferation. But here Buddha mentioned mental proliferation promotes thinking. So it's a kind of a cyclic process. So when one has a tendency to proliferate, when one has a kind of a desire to proliferate, when one is addicted to thinking, thinking on and on, obsessive thinking. So that is a kind of a obsessive nature that one's mind has. So as a result of that, whenever he sees something, whenever he hears something, immediately he start to think. So actually, again, what we hear, see, smell, taste, etc., that's also products of someone else's or one's own results of mental proliferation. They spend a lot of time thinking in different ways, and ultimately they come up with something, and that actually has a potential to promote thinking. When one see a beautiful car, so it's a great product of one's imagination, many people's imaginations, many people's contribution, thinking. So as a result of that, when one see that, so it promotes thinking. So on the other hand, when one start to think, so that thinking promotes prapancha, more and more thinking, more and more thinking, on and on. So ultimately, one is entrapped in thinking and mental proliferation. So therefore, there's a kind of an interrelationship between these two, thinking and mental proliferation. They are interdependent. And then Godsaka asks, what is the patipada? What is the practice one has to use in order to overcome this mental proliferation? Now, this is where we come across a very interesting strategy Buddha mentioned here, that is to look at various feelings. Actually, Buddha mentioned how to overcome mental proliferation in Indriya Bhavana Sutta in terms of the mind. So directly looking the mind, directly watching the mind, and using which one can overcome mental proliferation. So that is one approach. But if one can't do it, so another aspect or another strategy is mentioned here in this Sakkapanya Sutta. There Buddha mentioned the feelings are of three types. Those are the pleasurable feelings or happy feelings, and the unhappy feelings, Domanassa, and the equanimous feelings. So those are the typical three types of feelings one has and one go through. And there Buddha mentioned all these three types can be divided again depending on whether they are suitable to associate or not suitable to associate. All those are to be avoided. Sevitabbampi, asevitabbampi. So all the pleasurable feelings Buddha mentioned, there may be pleasurable feelings, those are beneficial to go through, and there may be certain other feelings, pleasurable feelings, those are not suitable to associate. Those are to be avoided. So how are we going to determine whether something is suitable or unsuitable? That is, the criterion given is that if any kind of a feeling, it may be a pleasurable feeling, even though it is pleasurable, once we reflect, if we understand that even though this is a pleasurable feeling, it has promoted lust in myself, it has promoted anger in my mind, it has promoted jealousy in my mind, it has promoted avarice in my mind. So likewise, if some sort of a pleasurable feeling has promoted unwholesome qualities in one's mind, then Buddha mentioned, don't associate such pleasurable feeling. Even though it is giving us pleasurable feeling, but it is not useful to associate, it is not beneficial, it is harmful to associate. So therefore Buddha mentioned, don't associate such pleasurable feelings. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned there are pleasurable feelings after, say, you experience that. You feel kind of calm, you feel relaxed, you feel faithful, you feel energetic, and you feel peaceful, you feel that your wisdom has grown. So likewise, the wholesome aspects are developed because of the association of that pleasurable feeling. So then Buddha mentioned, you do have to associate that pleasurable feelings. So similarly, Buddha mentioned about the other two categories, that is the Tomanassa and the Upekkha. So there may be painful feelings. Those are promoting, in a way, some sort of unwholesome qualities in the mind. So if you understand honestly, humbly, that even though I am, say, going through these kind of painful feelings, I'm certainly enduring or being patient with certain amount of suffering. If it is promoting some sort of unwholesome qualities in one's mind, then Buddha mentioned you have to discard it. Don't associate that painful feeling. On the other hand, when you are understanding that certain painful feelings, even though they are painful, but there is a high tendency that I am developing fair amount of mindfulness by enduring it, fair amount of concentration being developed while I am enduring it, certain amount of wisdom being developed while enduring it. So if you recognize that this particular feeling, even though it is painful, it promotes many wholesome qualities in the mind, and it may even weaken the unwholesome qualities in the mind, then Buddha mentioned that those are to be associated. Similarly, there may be unwholesome qualities, the equanimous feelings, and those equanimous feelings also have those two categories, either to be associated or to be avoided. So accordingly, depending on whether they are causing the improvement of the wholesome qualities and the decrease of the unwholesome qualities, then one has to associate them. So this is the theory that Buddha mentioned. And on the other hand, when one is now associating the ones which is useful, beneficial, they are also, Buddha mentioned, they are of two types. One is accompanied and by thinking and pondering. The other one is not associating or not accompanied with thinking and pondering. So here actually another very interesting point with the highlights, because at the beginning we don't have a completely silent mind. You may encounter some amount of thinking. Say you are enjoying some association, you are enjoying some sort of a discussion. At that time it is quite pleasurable. At least it is quite peaceful, and you understand it is involved with some amount of thinking and pondering, and also it involves it develops fair amount of wholesome qualities or understanding about the Dhamma. So that is, therefore you are continuing, so that may be acceptable. But later Buddha mentioned there's another attribute. How about going through these pleasurable feelings while keeping the mind silent? So that's another very interesting attribute here Buddha highlights. So that one has to come to that level if it is not really useful to thinking at this moment, not necessary to ponder at this moment, try to keep the mind quiet. Try to experience inner silence. So inner silence, or whatever the pleasurable feelings, whatever the painful feelings, whatever the equanimous feelings that you are going through, if you are quite sure that they are promoting wholesome qualities and weakening the unwholesome qualities, you got to associate them. At the same time, now you can further refine it by minimizing thinking, minimizing pondering. So by that way, now one is coming to a very calm, quiet silence of the mind. So in that way we come across complete cessation of mental proliferation. So cessation of mental proliferation is therefore accomplished by going through this kind of a strategy. And then now we actually come across another stage of this Sakkapanya Sutta. Now after hearing this whole information, Gotsaka didn't stop there. So he is asking another question, because those are quite relevant to the practice. Gotsaka, even though he is a god right now, celestial being right now, he has actually observed how monks are practicing, how other devotees are practicing. So he is in a way quite diligent about this practice. And he has very good questions here. What is the proper method of practice? And now he asks another question. What practice has that monk undertaken who has acquired the restraint required by the rules. Now here God Sakka is asking in a way the monk's discipline, and this is actually the attribute of sila, morality. It is not only that monks have to take the precepts, observe precepts, or maintain some very good behavior. All the practitioners have to maintain very good behavior, because otherwise you can't maintain a very good ground, very good stage, very good foundation for your practice. The morality appears or kind of function as a foundation for one's practice. It's very much like a foundation for a huge building. If you don't have a very strong foundation, after a couple of years, the building may collapse. Similarly, if one has to maintain a very good practice, mental development, cognitive development, then one has to have a very good moral foundation. So now here, God Sakka asks how one is maintaining such moral conduct. And here, Buddha gives another explanation how a proper practitioner, a good practitioner, is involved with this restrainment. And he mentioned that in terms of bodily conduct, in terms of speech, and in terms of pursuit of goals. So these are the three levels that Buddha mentioned here. Typically what we know is kaya sankhara, vachi sankhara, mano sankhara. Or the kaya sangvara, vachi sangvara, mano sangvara. Here there's a small difference in this sutta. It is not mano sangvara, but it's the pursuit of goals. Anyway, we can approximately say that it is part of the mind, how one is setting up one's goals, one's determinations. Anyway, here also Buddha mentioned bodily conduct also of twofold. Sevitabbampi asevitabbampi. Bodily conduct also of twofold, that is, one certain kinds of bodily conduct can be associated and certain other types of bodily conduct should be avoided, should not be associated. Similarly, conduct of speech, certain type can be associated, can be useful, can be beneficial, and certain other type of speech should not be associated, should be avoided. Similarly, certain kinds of goals should be pursued, beneficial, and on the other hand, certain other goals are not beneficial, may be harmful, so those have to be avoided. So here, again the criterion, how to decide whether something is useful or not useful, whether something has to be associated or avoided. So the criterion is similar. So whenever you are going through some sort of bodily conduct, assume that you are doing some activity, bodily activity. At that time you have to reflect whether it is promoting wholesome qualities in the mind or is it promoting unwholesome qualities in the mind. Say for example, you are watching a movie. So it's involved with the body and you are sitting comfortably and you are watching a movie. Bodily conduct. So at that time, Buddha mentioned actually this actually come under the sense restraint immediately. So that also separately God Sakka asked. Anyway, just to give a simple example. So if we are involved in this kind of watching movies, so it is true that it is promoting a lot of happiness in the mind. But on the other hand, we can say, okay, I am becoming more and more prone to thinking, proliferating, doubting, lustful, fantasizing, and all sorts of different, say, unwholesome qualities may be sprout in the mind, may be growing in the mind. So if one understands that, then Buddha mentioned it is not a bodily conduct, that one has to associate. On the other hand, say you are involving with the walking meditation, for example, it's a bodily activity. And if you understand, okay, this bodily activity is useful because I am developing fair amount of mindfulness through this activity, I am developing fair amount of concentration through this activity, and I am developing fair amount of wisdom through this activity. So such bodily activity is better pursue, better continue, better associate. So likewise, Buddha mentioned to Godsaka, the criterion to select is the promotion of wholesome qualities and the weakening of unwholesome qualities, strengthening of wholesome qualities and weakening of unwholesome qualities. So if you understand any kind of bodily conduct promotes wholesome qualities and it weakens unwholesome qualities, now you can associate that kind of a bodily conduct. Similarly, Buddha mentioned about the speech. Now you are doing some kind of a speech. Suppose you are now talking to another person. You are in a conversation, a dialogue. So this dialogue, if you feel now I am talking about the Dhamma and he is also talking about the Dhamma and we are in a way strengthening our understanding of, regarding the Dhamma. So this is a very good conversation. It's a speech, conduct of speech, vachi samachara. So, but you understand, I mean, this speech is quite useful. I had certain doubts about certain, say, principles, certain facts about the Dhamma. But with this conversation, I was able to sort them out. So therefore, no harm in continuing this kind of conversation, vachi samachara, speech, conduct of speech. So you can actually associate that conduct of speech. On the other hand, suppose now some people are locked down and you have nothing to do, you pick the phone and talking on and on, many unnecessary things, maybe about politics, maybe about different subjects, completely irrelevant, completely maybe sort of gossiping. And if you understand, okay, I have wasted several hours in talking to him and there is no essence in what we have talked, but we spent several hours, I have spent so much of money on this whatever the telephone bill, and on top of that, I my mind also has become fairly confused with what he has mentioned. I actually didn't know even those things, but with those information I become further confused. Now I am regretting about what I did. So such kind of a speech, Buddha mentioned, don't associate, don't continue, don't pursue. Similarly, the pursuit of goals. So different types of goals we have. Say one want to be a doctor, one want to be an engineer, one want to be a lawyer, one want to be a businessman, successful businessman. So we all have certain types of goals in our mind. So that may be related to our career. On the other hand, we may have certain other goals. So I want to become a famous person. I want to become a lovable person. So likewise, different goals are there. Now we have to reflect, are they really promoting kind of a self-view? Are they really promoting some sort of a conceit by pursuing these different goals? Am I going to develop wholesome qualities? Or is this kind of goals leading to have sort of more confused, more complicated, more troublesome mind? So likewise, when we are pursuing a goal, when we are implementing a goal, Buddha mentioned you have to reflect. Actually, not only in this sutta Buddha mentioned this. Even when Venerable Rahula is talking with the Buddha, in I think in Ambalattika Rahulovada Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya, there also Buddha mentioned to Venerable Rahula, Pachavekitva, Pachavekitva, Kayena Kammam Katabba. You have to reflect again and again when you are doing a bodily activity. Actually, they are very beautifully Buddha mentioned, it is not only while you are conducting it, even before you start the activity, you have to think. You have to reflect whether is it a good conduct to do, whether is it a good bodily activity to involve with. So before you start the activity, you have to reflect. Is it a useful one? Is it harmful one? Is it beneficial one? Or is it a not beneficial one? So that Buddha mentioned, you have to reflect. So before conducting it, before starting it, suppose you got the answer, yes, it is useful, it is beneficial, so you started. Now while doing it, while you are involved with it, there again Buddha mentioned, you have to reflect. You have to reflect whether it is it really useful, whether is it really beneficial, or is it really harmful. Now you can see kind of a practical approach here, because sometimes at the beginning we can't understand whether some activity is useful or not useful. It's very difficult to say understand sometimes, unless we do it. So that is why Buddha mentioned, while doing it, while you are engaged with it, again you got to reflect. What am I doing? Is it really useful? Is it really beneficial? Is it promoting wholesome qualities? Is it weakening unwholesome qualities? So you have to do another honest reflection, another honest kind of a introspection, kind of an assessment. So if you are doing that, then Buddha say, if you get the answer as yes, yes it is beneficial, yes it is useful, it promotes very good spiritual qualities, certain spiritual skills in myself, then you can continue, you can complete the task. While you are doing this reflection, if you got the answer as no, now you got to stop. Even though you have done it for some time, but you, through your reflection, you got an answer that it is not useful, it is harmful. Now you got to stop. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned to Venerable Rahula, at the end of the task also, now you have completed the task, there again you do a kind of a reflection. I have completed this bodily task. Was it really beneficial? Did I get the proper benefits? Was it really useful? Are the others also benefiting? Did I able to improve my wholesome qualities? Did I able to improve weaken my unwholesome qualities? So likewise, now you do another kind of reflection after the completion of the task. There also Buddha mentioned, if you understood, okay, yes, it was quite useful, I am now enjoying the benefits of that task, many others are also enjoying the benefits of that task, so that means you are well done. You can again even do that on another time if the requirement arises. You can even do it again, no harm, because it was a useful one, useful task. But on the other hand, even after completion of the task, if you get a negative answer, that means even though I have completed it, I myself went through a lot of troubles, I myself has improved some unwholesome qualities and decreased certain wholesome qualities, and many others also have suffered. So likewise, if you get an answer negatively, then you better avoid doing it again. So you can see a very practical approach here, that the related to the bodily conducts, Buddha say to reflect like this. Before the beginning of the conduct, while you are engaged with the conduct, and after the end of the conduct. Similar reflection Buddha mentioned to apply while speech, during the speech. Before you speak, do a reflection. While speaking, do a reflection. At the end of the speech, do a reflection. And here, if we connect this to this Sakkapanha Sutta, we can say the other part. before you start implementing a goal, now you have a task in hand, now you have some sort of a determination, now you have decided to do something. Now before you start it, you do a reflection. Now I am going to start this task. Now I am going to implement this particular task. I am going to accomplish my goal. Is it worth? Is it correct? Is it beneficial? Is it improving the wholesome qualities? So one has to do such a reflection. And if you, yes, you got the answer, then you are continuing because it is positive. And while you are continuing your goal, while you are trying to fulfill your goal, that there also you have to reflect. Similarly, at the end of the accomplishment of the goal, again you have to reflect. So there may be sometimes goals at the beginning appear like quite useful, because sometimes our mind is quite perverted. So at the beginning we can't really get the true picture of a situation. We may want to do something, we may want to implement something, but internally there may be a kind of a perverted view in the mind. Say for example, you want to conduct a say musical program, and you think, okay, it would be quite beneficial. Now people are entrapped in the homes, and it is my duty to enjoy them, my duty to make them happy, so it is quite useful. And they are quite depressed, so I can participate in a musical program, I can enjoy them. So likewise, you assume that you got a kind of a goal. So it appear like quite true, it is quite beneficial, and you are with a sort of a compassionate goal, and assume that now you are doing it. So while you are doing it also, you can check, is it others really getting benefited? Are they going away from their, say, boredom, depression? Are they really getting benefited? So likewise, you grew a kind of a reflection. And at the end of the task, after the completion, again you can reflect. So did I do it properly? What are the outcomes? Now I have accomplished this task. So maybe now you are thinking another way as well. Am I getting popular because of this? What is the perspective others are having about me? Will they invite me for another show? Will they start to pay me? Am I able to get more, say, popular singer, popular person, and I'm going to be a famous singer, famous preacher, whatever it is. So I'm just taking a simple example here, so you can similarly think. Because sometimes we have certain perverted ideas, perverted views in our mind, but we even can't understand them. Why am I doing it? Why am I starting this kind of a project? But while continuing, if we do some sort of a honest reflection, probably we may understand, okay, I'm searching for some sort of fame, searching for some sort of gain, searching for some sort of self-promotion, searching for some sort of popularity, cheap popularity even. So likewise, so when we are accomplishing our own goals, it is better we do some sort of reflection. So therefore Buddha mentioned, at the beginning also it is necessary to do, while engaged with it you got to do, and at the end of the goal accomplishment again it is good to do. Because it is difficult at the beginning in all sense to get a very good understanding about everything. It may be applied to speech, it may be applied to a bodily conduct, it may be applied to even a mental thinking part, pondering part, or implementing a goal. So that is the discussion that Sakka had with the Buddha. And next, I think I can part the other part I can get into the other part also. Then after given this example, God Sakka asks another question. And there he asks how one has to control one's sense faculties. Now here also, now we can say it is also connected with the sila, what we call as Indriya Sangvara Sila, restrainment of one's sense faculties. So even though we have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and the mind, so if we are neglectful in using them, if we are negligent in using them, if we are not careful about how to use them, then ultimately they can provide a lot of problems to ourselves. So there again Buddha mentioned that all different types of forms, different types of sounds, different types of smells, tastes, tactile sensations, thoughts, they are also two types. That there are ones when we are associating them, those promotes wholesome qualities in the mind. Those weakens unwholesome qualities of the mind. Then Buddha mentioned you can associate them. On the other hand, if you are using your sense faculties, say you are listening to certain amount of music, and if you feel, okay, I was in a kind of a depressed mood, not quite happy, or I was in a quite angry mood, now I started certain music, so it has calmed me down. So my burning feeling, kind of aggressive feeling, has really calmed down because of this listening of music. So then it is acceptable, because you were in a fairly aggressive situation, mind was quite aggressive, you are in a very unhappy situation, but because of listening to this piece of music, again you are able to come back to senses, again your mind become peaceful. Then again no problem, because you have taken the benefit, you have got the benefit through that music. On the other hand, say you are in a very peaceful situation, but somehow you switch on your cassette recorder or CD player or whatever it is, and now you started to listen to music. Now you become slowly restless. Your mind start to fantasize. You start to think again and again, more and more. Ultimately, you end up with maybe fantasies, maybe sort of again anger or some sort of thing. So after listening to this sort of music, then definitely it is not a useful way of using your faculties. So similarly, you can apply the same theory to other faculties. So whatever the forms, whatever the sights, whatever the sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, thoughts, if they are promoting wholesome qualities and weakening unwholesome qualities, then better we can associate them. On the other hand, if they are not promoting wholesome qualities, instead they are weakening wholesome qualities and strengthening unwholesome qualities, then we should avoid them. Actually, after understood the kind of the repetition here, the determination factor, the criterion, and how Buddha dividing and explaining this, God Sakka understood this pattern, and actually God Sakka himself answer the question here. So that is where we can summarize in this diagram that all different kinds of bodily conduct, speech and pursuit of goals, they are of two categories, either to pursue or either to be avoided. So the criterion to decide is either wholesome qualities are improved or not, unwholesome qualities are decreased or not. And similarly, in related to the sense faculties, so Buddha mentioned, so this, when one is using one's sense faculties, so there are things to be perceived through eye, chakku vinyayam rupa. So there are different forms, different sights, there are different sounds, different smells, tastes, tactile sensations, and again the thoughts, things to be perceived through the mind. So when we are associating them, if they are promoting wholesome qualities, then we can pursue them. Sevitabbampi. If they are promoting unwholesome qualities, then we should avoid them. For example, whatever object pursued by the eye, if its pursuit leads to the increase of unwholesome factors and decrease of wholesome ones, that is not to be sought after. So likewise, you can understand for the other faculties as well. So this is the answer that Buddha gave to that question. Actually, this sutta has another part we'll discuss on next week. And with this information, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
If you have any questions, you can raise your hand or you can send it through the chat. Thank you.
Okay, very good. There is no question, so all understood very well. Yeah, Mahesha is there.
I think one is...
Yes, yes. I thought because God Sakka got the good answers, so I thought that you also got good answers. But some questions are still remaining. Yeah, you can go ahead, Mahesha.
Mahesha, you can go ahead.
Thank you. Actually, this is not a kind of a question, but particularly that relating to the session that we had today, it's very clear that you explain it very well, that how we have to, you know, be mindful and then figure out like what kind of thoughts that we have to improve and what kind of thoughts that we have to disprove and then let them fade away.
Yeah.
So rather controlling. So that's very good. And I actually like to, you know, share a particular way of, you know, doing this that has been introduced to me by one of my Dharma friends, that when we were talking about, you know, our practice, each other, sometimes we talk once in a way.
Yeah.
So then she said that, she took an example and said that one day she was, you know, going, we actually talk about some kind of a fruit, that which actually really we found it here. It's called pineapple guava. It's very tasty. It's like a mix of guava, pear and pineapple. Pear we call in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
So it's in between. It goes in between. It's very nice. Man. So I tasted it. One of my friends gave, and then she was talking about that. That was a season for those kind of fruits. So she said she was going on a walk, and in a particular neighborhood, there is a tree, huge tree, and it's, you know, part of the tree actually branches are fallen onto the street side where she's walking, and it's full of fruits. And in one season that she felt like it's full of fruits, and then all of them were on the ground. So she was thinking, oh, someone would have actually used them instead, you know, they're just going getting into the earth. And then the next year, the year after, when she was walking, then her mind was, you know, pushing her, pick some. And then she was thinking, oh my God, if I'm picking like that, it's like I'm stealing, because I didn't ask from them and they didn't offer it to me. So then she thought about it, and then she recalls her mind, because she's having a practice that she always think about some doubtful situation. It comes, shall I do it or not? Shall I do it or not? Is it good or not? Something like that. She gets to her mind always what the Buddha will do, what Buddha's mind will do. So that's actually the theory that she used to, you know, use it as a practice when she is in a doubt whether it's good or bad. She always comes, if Buddha saw this tree, will he pick it? So I think that day, that idea that she's using, that's a really instantly good one, that we always, if we keep in our mind, when we get some crazy thoughts, what Buddha would do for a situation like this. So then I learned it from her, that I practice it now myself. most of the time it comes to my mind, rather, you know, let the mind thinking all sorts of things like, if I do this, what will happen if I do, so like that. So rather than taking I take it like, what if it's Buddha who saw this, what he would do. So let me do on that path. Let me think like that. So I thought I would like to, you know, share that with others, which is, I felt like it's a very good tool that my Dhamma friend was using, so I copied it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, it is in line with what Buddha has mentioned. Here, it's a kind of a bodily task that you are going to do. And here again, Buddha mentioned in the Sakkapanya Sutta, when you are accomplishing any kind of a bodily task, you got to see whether is this bodily task going to develop some wholesome qualities or is it going to develop certain unwholesome qualities. So if it says it is not something which is going to promote wholesome qualities, instead it is promoting some unwholesome qualities, better avoid doing it. And on the other hand, we can take it for another way, that what given to Venerable Rahula. So there are also the same thing, reflections are mentioned. Pachyavekitva kayena kamman khatabba. So you have to reflect again and again before you conduct a bodily task. You have to reflect again and again before you conduct a verbal task or speech. Similarly, thinking. So actually, it is good. So basically, in other terms, it appear like little troublesome because it is always that I have to in guard. But slowly, like a child becoming a good child. Suppose your son, your daughter is, say, somewhat not good. So you do, as a parent, you are trying to tame him. You are trying to advise him. You are trying to give him the proper education, maybe proper understanding, proper moral conduct, all these things. At the beginning, it may be difficult. But as he growing up, and as you are also continuing your effort, and you are giving many supports to guide him, and now slowly he himself has the understanding, okay, this is the correct thing, this is the incorrect thing. These are wrong. These are beneficial to me, these are not beneficial to me. At the beginning, child doesn't have that capacity to recognize what is beneficial and what is not beneficial. But as a mother, as a father, when you are nurturing the child with proper way, say with giving proper, say, education is not, I mean here, certain subjects, but rather related to the Dhamma, related to the proper morality, wisdom, etc. So that there is a situation that the child himself has the capacity to decide. Then you can simply, you don't need to intervene now, because he is now capable. He is an adult now, in a way. He's a good child now. Because he know how to do it properly, and he don't need to harm himself. He don't need to harm another person. So likewise, now he himself has that skill. So likewise, our minds also, we have to nurture at the beginning. We have to look after at the beginning. And we are using Buddha's teaching as a kind of a guideline, using which we are trying to tame the mind, using which we are trying to restrain the mind. So as the process going on, the mind itself start to realize, okay, these are harmful, these are not harmful. While I am engaged with certain unwholesome activity, I feel kind of a stress in the mind, kind of a tension in the mind, kind of a burning in the mind. So I better avoid doing it. So likewise, internally, the mind also start to feel it. So this is another place that we can encounter in our practice. So there is a situation where we do kind of a controlling at the beginning, especially. And there is another level that once the mind itself has that developed some capacity, then we have to loosen our hand. We have to lose the grip and allow the mind to sort of sustain that developed quality. Then slowly, it's a kind of balancing of effort and allowing the mind itself to purify. And we, of course, do a kind of a guideline if necessary. But already kind of it is well directed. It is put into the correct path. Sila Samadhi Panya. You are in the correct virtues. You are having enough necessary amount of concentration. And again and again, you are further developing wisdom. So likewise, I think there's another way that we can think of this situation. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Bhante. Now I would like to invite Chitra Devi to present your question.
Thanks. You have mic? Okay, now. Okay, I. Okay.
You're good, right?
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, can. Yes. Now can.
Thank you. I was going to make a comment, but you kind of, in this last explanation, you kind of explained it partially, but what I was going to say was that we have to be all the time on guard, and that can be very stressful at times,
yes.
But when we are thinking, or when we are going to make an action, or when we are going to speak, and you know, the mind gets very tired, Bhante, sometimes, you know? Even when we are doing concentrating on wholesome activities, sometimes the mind gets very tired.
Yes.
So you kind of said, well, at the beginning you have to be like that, and later on loosen. But I don't know whether we can. You say before we do something, you look, you assess the situation. Then in the middle we have to assess. Then at the end we have to assess. Well, that is very good training, but. It can be very stressful, Bhante.
Yeah, actually that is, I mean, from the Rahula Suttas, actually there are many Rahula Suttas. And there is one Rahula Sutta in the Sutta Nipata. There is several Rahula Suttas in Majjhima Nikaya, like Ambalattika Rahulavada Sutta, Maharahulavada Sutta. So likewise, there are many Rahula Suttas. Now you can see the situation that Venerable Rahula became a monk at the age of 7. Now he's a child. Now Buddha and Venerable Sariputta continuously guide him. So he is becoming an adult, young adult, and then he is becoming an adult. So likewise, he is now growing. Now he didn't have association with his own mother, but he has to associate monks. Buddha and the Sariputta, Venerable Sariputta are the immediate teachers, you can say. So time to time. So these teachers are advising him, and different suttas are reflecting in a way different age categories also. Now especially, say for example, one time that Buddha is advising him the repercussions of lying. The Buddha say, okay, yeah, he is using certain similes. Okay, it's like an empty vessel. You have nothing there. It is very much like if someone is lying, he has nothing. Basically, he is an empty person. On the other hand, if that vessel has a little amount of water, and he says, okay, if one is lying, the good qualities he has is very little. So likewise, using various similes, he is educating a child in a way. So Venerable Rahula is growing with these, advices. And so as you said at the beginning, maybe Venerable Rahula didn't have the capacity, because he is a child, to properly know to the full extent, okay, is it true, is it useful, is it beneficial, is it wholesome, is it unwholesome. So that reflection he has to do in purpose, and that is the Buddha's advice. But later, so as he has developed, now he is given many other sort of advanced practices. Now he is talking about various, say, sense faculties, Salayatana, and even the talks about the Nibbana and all sorts of things. So likewise, gradually now he has his spiritual qualities has developed. So in one occasion, actually Buddha talks about the real crux of the Dhamma. So likewise, we can apply the same scenario to our lives. So at the beginning, we also don't have much understanding. So we have to have some amount of restraint and strict, in a way, guarding of the mind, because otherwise we will be in trouble. But later, as we develop a fair amount of mindfulness, if we continue the same amount of energy, then we can't grow. At that time we have to loosen. At that time we have to lose energy and allow the mind to little play. That is that actually that happens at the Chittanupassana. Now, if you maintain very high concentration in Chittanupassana, your mind does not go to any object. It is simply stuck. Then how are you going to observe whether the mind is lustful, whether the mind is resentful, whether the mind is jealous, whether the mind is loving kindness, whether the mind is faithful? So likewise, so different qualities to appear in the mind, you have to give some freedom to the mind to play, to play to some extent. But you are quite mindful because you went through a path, you went through a certain amount of practice, you did a fair amount of kaya anupassana, and if necessary, you went through a fair amount of, say, vedana anupassana. So likewise, now it is not a kind of a beginner now. Now you are, say, already know that I have a certain quality called mindfulness. I have a certain quality called concentration. So the mind has equipped already. Now you allow it to play. So then you can carefully observe where it is again and again going, where it is going again and again and grasping. So that is then only mind will show its real nature, its true nature. So far it was not behaving like that because we were holding it, we were restricting it. But here we are coming to a situation, we allow the mind to play, allow the mind to freely move, but slowly we apply wisdom in a way. Mindfulness will tell us, okay, now the fellow has gone to this object, now he has entangled in it, now he is in a trouble. Now mindfulness will show us. Then we are carefully applying wisdom and release the mind. Something like that.
But we have to apply this in our daily lives, Nabante.
Yes, yes.
We are meditating. We don't have people coming and saying or doing things. So we are only constantly watching our thoughts and our, getting the samadhi and going beyond.
Yes.
That's not difficult after a while. But then the real crux of the matter is, if you are practicing correctly, then we have to do it in our daily lives. Nabante.
Definitely. Yes.
And that is a challenge sometimes, not always, but sometimes.
Yes, yes.
Is that right, Bhante?
Yes. So actually going through the challenge is one part of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, if you are always avoiding challenges, then how are we going to develop? Because we have to put ourselves into those challenges. I mean, I'm not asking to ask and get in the trouble. But basically, I mean, somehow different challenges may come on our way. So how are we tackling them? How are we handling them? So we have to have certain amount of mindfulness, certain amount of wisdom. So we have to apply them. Then only we can say, okay, we are living according to the Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay, if there is no any other question, we can wind up the session. Yes. Yeah.
Bhante, I have a question, Bhante. You know, mm-hmm. I think this related to that Chitra Devi's question. It's basically, you know, when you're even doing like a wholesome things, you know, sometimes I feel really stressed, you know, stressed too, because, you know, especially like, you know, as an example, just one thing, like I can say like, okay, preparing dana, right? So, you know, you know, the intention is there, you start it really nice, and towards the end, like sometimes, you know, I feel okay with that, I'll be able to, you know, finish it on time, and I will be able to, like, you know, take dana to temple, you know, on time. And because we are doing it, like, you know, like our, you know, family duties, responsibilities, and everything. So, and sometimes, you know, I feel like, you know, that, you know, although that the activity is like a wholesome, you know, being mindful, sometimes, you know, I notice that, you know, so then I feel it, but, you know, then I'm like, no, I'm fine, I'll be able to do that, you know, no worries, like that, I try to, like, calm myself. So, any advice for that, Bhante,
yeah,
you can give me?
So, actually, I mean,
So if you are not mindful, you would be even more anxious. Because yes. I mean, then you are because that is the nature of ourselves. I mean, we are not mindful, we become panicking, we become anxious, impatient, restless, and all sorts of difficulties are there. But when we are mindful, at least we know I am now restless. My mind has now agitated. My mind have now become somewhat anxious. So now you understand this is a kind of a weakness in myself. Still, I can't handle things while keeping my mind quiet. My mind become agitated while I am engaging in this kind of a task. So this is an understanding. So we have to look at it in that angle. So we don't need to see, we don't need to see this as a problem, as a kind of a negative remark. But now, at least because of the practice, now I know where I still go wrong, where I am losing my practice, where I am weak in my practice. So it's a matter of now strengthening the practice. Now, say for example, so at the beginning when we start developing mindfulness, say only certain parts we can do it. Say while walking, I am trying to be mindful. While sitting, I am trying to be mindful. But most of the other times, mind is not mindful. But slowly, we are developing. Then you understand, okay, while walking, I can be mindful. While sitting, I can be mindful. While eating also, now I can be mindful. Now later, okay, while brushing teeth, also I can be mindful. Okay, while driving the car, again I can be mindful. Now slowly, slowly, you are expanding. So similarly, here also, so you understand, okay, now I am watching the mind. So this fellow is getting stressed when engaged with preparing dana or whatever it is. Even though it is a wholesome activity, I am taking it too seriously. I am over-enthusiastic. So I am going after too much perfection. So likewise, there are many reasons. So we are sometimes want to become everything 100% correct, everything perfect. But practically it is impossible. So at that time we have to recognize some sort of practical possible target. Okay, I am doing it best. It is not that I am neglecting. I am doing my best but can't do it to the 100%. So I am just admitting it and continuing it. So likewise, so we have to come to a situation. So where am I go wrong? Why is the reason that mind gets stressed? So what are the unnecessary burden that I am putting on my head? So likewise, we have to do a kind of a honest reflection how this sort of a stress or tension is being developed in the mind. So, and after recognizing by ourselves, we can slowly give some, say, solution to overcome that.
Yes, Maldeus, I actually, you know, it's, you know, perfectly understood, you know, you actually pointed few of my characteristics as well.
Now I know a little bit.
So, I really that as, thank you so much, Maldeus,
yeah,
so much,
okay.
Very.
Okay, then actually since there are no other questions, we can wind up today's session. So we have involved with studying some Dhamma from the Buddha, and again we involved with some good discussion. With this way we were able to accumulate some merits. We'll share these merits by reciting traditional verses. Yattavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā yattavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya ettavata jamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu.